KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in West Menlo Park.
Haight-Ashbury.
I live in the Western Addition.
Vernal Heights.
Coming up, we'll explore the environmental impacts of one of the state's biggest cash crops. How will the cannabis industry affect the state's water?
A lot of people feel like the cannabis cultivation is taking an extreme amount of water.
Then we'll hear how cannabis can be compared with another growth industry, timber.
In California, where there's pretty strict regulation on timber harvest, you can't harvest timber and just leave it. Those are all replanted. For cannabis, who knows what these guys are going to do?
And we'll hear your thoughts about adult use legalization.
The marijuana industry should be save for people who've been displaced from other industries.
Our intensive look at cannabis in California starts today on Cross Currents. In a few weeks, when recreational marijuana becomes legal in California, it'll legitimately become one of the state's top crops, up there with grapes, almonds, and milk. And like most agriculture, cannabis plants need a lot of water to grow. Some researchers estimate each plant consumes an average of 6 gallons of water a day. And in many cases, growers take that water from streams and creeks. But because the industry has been so unregulated in the past, cannabis's true impact on vulnerable ecosystems is not clear. With legalization on the horizon, scientists are trying to document the thirsty plant's effect on watersheds and make rules so that growers don't drain creeks dry. KALW's environment reporter, Angela Johnston, has more.
Ben Durkee is a true Trinity local. He's lived and worked in the Northern California county for his entire life.
I grew up on a little creek on Ransom Road in Weaverville. We always called the creek the Wrong Creek because we had a two-house little dirt road that was labeled the Wrong Road.
He remembers swimming there, splashing around with his friends, and watching his neighbors tend to their bountiful fruit and vegetable garden with water from the creek. But Durkee says for the past decade, things on Wrong Creek haven't been quite right.
It's been a dry riverbed for over 10 years now, and it's probably never going to come back, which is just really sad.
Durkee works at a fishing lodge, which caters to visitors casting their lines in the Trinity River watershed.
If there's no water for people to fish, if there are no fish, my job doesn't exist.
Like many people up here, Durkee blames one group for the loss of his childhood creek.
Marijuana farmers damming up local creeks that are used as a primary water source for residences, effectively stealing that water for their own gain.
There are thousands of cannabis farms in Trinity County, so if you buy marijuana in California, there's a good chance it's grown here. And it's where you'll likely find water detective Brian McFadden, up to his waist in freezing cold water, doing what he dubs forensic hydrology, investigating Durkee's concerns. McFadden works for the North Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board. A few years ago, locals approached him wanting to know why their creeks were drying up. To find out, McFadden and his team monitor the water flow at more than 30 locations up and down the Trinity watershed.
A lot of people feel like taking an extreme amount of water. I don't know that that's the case, but that's part of why we're doing this project, be able to shed light on that.
First, McFadden stretches a long tape measure across the width of the creek. Then he sticks a metal pole into the water. It's called a flow tracker, and it has a computer at the top and an acoustic sensor at the bottom.
So we'll do 16 verticals.
Okay.
Every half foot.
Perfect.
McFadden inches it along the tape measure, recording the water's velocity and depth at different increments across the creek.
10.7, depth is 0.8.
Those measurements, plus a little math, tell him exactly how much water is moving by. The flow.
Negative 0.17. Sorry.
What? McFadden compares these numbers with the amount of water that historically flows through the creeks at the same time of year. And although his team hasn't published their final report yet, it's easy to tell where there are some big, big changes. Back in the car, McFadden shows me some graphs.
Where's that chart? So this isn't going to work for your radio audience.
In some spots this year, the flow levels plummeted. Someone, he says, emptied the creek quickly.
We can say, oh, God, there's something going on there. And basically what we see is right around the end of July, you know, somebody turned on a pump is what it looks like, shut it off, turned it back on, and basically flatlined the stream. It was to the point where we couldn't really measure it. It was so low.
Just a thin film of water on the top. In other places around the watershed, it's worse. So where are we headed right now?
Right now, we're going to Post Creek.
Post Creek is downstream from Trinity Pines, an extremely concentrated subdivision of cannabis farms packed on top of each other into the hillsides.
Yeah, you can see that was his patch, and he's harvested most of it.
You can see it from Google Earth, hundreds of beige pockmarks dotting the green landscape. Zoom in closer, rows and rows of plants.
And it is everywhere. You can see that they've, in some cases, built terraces into the hillsides to make room for the plants.
What you can't see from our car, you can smell.
Yeah, I would estimate we've driven past a few thousand marijuana plants in just the last few minutes. And I would imagine it's a lot more than 1,000 plants that are back there.
Not everyone here takes water directly from the creek, but the past two summers, Post Creek dried up.
Gives you a sense of the scale of the issue, though.
The implications are also huge and far-reaching. After a day of monitoring, McFadden and I sit along the bank of the Trinity River and watch a fly fisherman cast his line into the water. A Chinook salmon slowly swims by our feet.
He and his kin are a big part of what we're trying to protect. At one time, there were really large runs of fish like this fish we're looking at that fed a lot of families, and that isn't the case anymore. We'd sure like to turn that around.
Photographs, water rights records, and data from the Water Board's cannabis permitting program show it isn't only marijuana farmers diverting water from these habitats. Traditional agriculture and homes use just as much water in the Trinity region. But McFadden says cannabis use is incredibly hard to monitor and to correct.
I mean, we see some really egregious things, too, where people just build their roads in the stream and things that we hadn't seen since the logging days of the 60s.
McFadden hopes his team's data will help right these wrongs. The Water Board's already understaffed enforcement unit can use info about the most vulnerable streams to decide which water guzzlers they should patrol first. And he hopes it'll encourage growers to get with the programs. If you want to grow recreational cannabis legally next year, you'll need to get permits with the Water Board, Fish and Wildlife, and the county. And depending on what you're growing for, you'll probably need one or more state permits, too.
If they stay in the cannabis economy and they abide by the regulatory programs that are out there that are designed to protect the environment, then over time, I think those things will get fixed.
But so far, Water Board enrollment numbers are on the low side. Getting your grow up to code costs a lot of money. Many farmers find it cheaper to stay under the radar or just leave the business completely and leave their mess behind, too. Right now, McFadden says it's ultimately up to the consumer to ask where their marijuana comes from.
You should ask the question, and you should be interested if you're a cannabis user, because market opinions matter. People don't want to buy marijuana that's grown with water that is impacting the environment. Then I think cultivators will respond. If they're not able to sell it for as high a price as otherwise, that's going to get their attention.
Down in Sonoma County, farmer Mike Benziger says that's what his customers value.
More and more, you know, my customers are younger people who really understand that the environment is in trouble and that their kids and maybe their grandkids are going to be paying for the bad actors in the past. You want a quick tour?
Yeah, I have a couple questions.
Benziger grows his 50 cannabis plants alongside persimmon trees, Swiss chard, eggplants, and other colorful fruit and veggies.
It's a little banana belt. The sun always shines here. The birds always tweet. You know, it's a little bit like La La Land. It's perfect.
His crops overlook the winery he used to own with his siblings. It's where he started experimenting with biodynamic farming.
Taste how tender that is.
Mm, so good.
Yeah.
It's a process that focuses on cultivating really healthy soil, so farmers don't have to use as many other resources.
Boy, that smells good. Think of biodynamics as the most advanced form of organic farming.
When Benziger was diagnosed with cancer in 2010, he and his wife wanted a change. So they left the winery and started growing produce and three types of medicinal cannabis. When I visit, Benziger has harvested all of it. He's drying and trimming the buds in the barn behind his house. But he stops to show me their empty beds.
We grow a sativa called Tangi. We grow a hybrid called Girl Scout Cookies. And then we grow an indica called Bubba Kush.
One of the things he's most proud of is how little water he uses. That's because he's staked soil moisture probes next to the plants.
So we're not just watering by formula, and we're not just watering from the seat of our pants, but we're watering because we're measuring, and we know what the plants need. We know where the roots are, so we can hold the water back until the last second.
Remember water detective Brian McFadden? Research he's done shows that many cannabis farmers water their plants with up to 6 gallons of water a day. With these moisture meters, Benziger cut that to under 2 gallons.
We can water only when the plant wants it, not when the farmer thinks it.
Benziger also waters his cannabis and all his other crops with recycled water. He captures it from the roofs and stores it in giant green rain barrels.
You see the big tank there. I have 20,000 gallons of storage there, and then another 5,000 gallons of storage up top.
This technology makes it easy for him to comply with new environmental regulations. Benziger installed this system years ago, not anticipating that starting in 2018, most cannabis growers in Sonoma County must use recycled water. Indoor growers will have to use 100% renewable energy. Benziger's got that covered, too. A large plot of solar panels powers his small indoor operation. While he says they're scalable at any size farm, he knows they're not cheap.
Well, let me put it this way. The expense is usually in building the infrastructure up front.
Now they spend less on water, soil, and power. But Benziger says it cost him $50,000 to install his recycled water system. A high price for a small operation. He thinks this is the reason why few growers have signed up for permits, only 127. He says there could be as many as 8,000 farms in Sonoma County.
So what's going to happen? You know, they're not going to go away. And it seems like some of these ordinances are so onerous that they're just driving the growers deeper into the woods, unfortunately.
He thinks there should be more flexible regulations. And farmers with water-saving or composting systems should get tax breaks, rewards for growing with care. That will help protect the watershed. And he says that's what's going to produce better marijuana, too. In Glen Ellen, I'm Angela Johnston for Cross Currents.
Have you got an environmental story you'd like to see reported? Email Angela at environment@kalw.org. And stay tuned. All week long, we're talking about how California will change through the legalization of cannabis. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Ben Trefney. We've just heard how increased cannabis growth impacts certain vulnerable watersheds. But water flow is not the only worrisome environmental change attributed to California's burgeoning cannabis industry. In Humboldt County, a team of researchers have been using satellite images to study cannabis grow sites for 3 years now. They've mapped nearly 3 million cannabis plants and analyzed how the location of grow sites impact the local ecosystem. They found that despite the relatively small size of most cannabis farms, their environmental impact is comparable to that of timber production. KALW's Hanna Baba spoke with one of the project's researchers, UC Berkeley professor Van Butsick.
So, tell me about the research project. What prompted it? What was the question?
Well, we wanted to know very basic questions like how many plants are there? Mm-hmm. How many people are actually growing? How many parcels in Humboldt County are producing cannabis? Because that data was never recorded before. Honestly, the whole cannabis environmental impact story, the journalists have been way ahead of the academics on. And so there was a number of articles that came out a few years ago talking about the environmental impacts of cannabis. And there are, you know, there are good journalism pieces, but journalists don't get 3 years to sit down and count 3 or 5 million plants, right?
No.
And so
That's why you do it.
Exactly. So we were interested in like, okay, like these are really interesting stories, but can we put some real numbers to it and put some real data and bring science to bear on this question?
And you did what?
What we did was pretty straightforward. So basically, you can see cannabis grows on Google Earth. And so over the last 3 years, we've worked with probably 30 undergraduates, and they document wherever they find the grow. They count the number of plants. They draw a little polygon around the size of the grow site, and then we take that data and do analysis on it. There's an incredible amount of cannabis being grown in the wildlands of Northern California.
More than you thought?
More than we thought. So there used to be a lot, and now there's a lot times two.
Hmm. And what else surprised you?
We were surprised by the location of the grows. So the fact that most of the grows are in areas that are really bad for agriculture.
Like what?
Areas with steep slopes, areas with wooded forest, areas with bad soil. These are typically the areas where you wouldn't grow any other crop, but people are growing cannabis there.
Why?
They're good places to hide. So during Prohibition era, it was a good spot to be growing cannabis.
Mm, okay. And what concerned you the most?
Probably the concern was the spatial arrangement of the grows. So timber harvest clears a much larger area of land than cannabis cultivation. But the patterns of the land clearing are different. You know, if you have a 100-acre forested parcel and you have a timber harvest, they might just knock out 10 acres. Where if you have the equivalent land use in cannabis, it might be 20 small holes in the forest.
So in terms of comparing cannabis to timber, can you talk about how they affect animals and animal life differently?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Timber harvest, you know, people will come in and there'll be a lot of disturbance for a short period of time while they harvest the trees.
A lot of disturbance.
A lot of disturbance. I mean, everything's taken away.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that they will replant. Trees will eventually come back. So, you know, the animals will then start using that as habitat because you'll have a growth of young trees and grasses and other things that some animals like. There's a number of animals that prefer core forests. So these are forests with no openings, right? So you can just imagine a big chunk of forest.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that cannabis is grown, where there's these small grows within the forest, really limits the amount of core forest that remains.
So in that way, is it worse than timber?
It's different.
For the environment?
It's different than timber. And it's also important to remember that, especially in California, where there's pretty strict regulation on timber harvest, those are all replanted.
Mm.
So in California, you can't harvest timber and just leave it. That doesn't really happen.
But for cannabis?
For cannabis, who knows what these guys are going to do?
There's right? no rule.
There's no rule. They could pick up and leave. Or if there are rules, they haven't been enforced historically.
Do you expect to see rules come January?
So in January, there'll be three sets of permits everybody will need to be a legal cannabis grower. You need a local permit, so typically from your county government. You also need a permit from the state water board. And so this is a permit that, you know, dictates how much water you can use, how you can get the water, if you can have a diversion from a stream. And then you need a state permit.
So come January, how will legalization impact these grows, do you think?
There's a number of pathways that we might see. Mm-hmm. So we know that about a quarter of the growers in Humboldt County are trying to be permitted, so trying to join the legal system. The other 75% are not. Some people just don't care. Other people don't want their name associated with cannabis with the way the federal government is right now.
Right.
And other people don't want to pay the fees. So I've talked to growers who have spent $100,000 trying to get legal, which is really expensive.
Do you think new permitting processes and more regulation for cannabis farms will have implications for other kinds of agriculture?
So that's something that we've heard quite a bit about. The cannabis regulations, especially for water use, were sort of written from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
Regulators were able to sort of do exactly what they wanted to do. There wasn't a strong lobby forcing them to act one way or the other. And so the rules that cannabis farmers are facing are really tough. They're really tough environmental standards. Mm. And if they can show that they can grow their crop and make a profit while following these really high standards, I would be surprised if the regulators didn't look at the wine industry or the almond industry and say, look, these guys can do it following these standards. Why can't you?
So what are you looking at next? What are you really curious about in the next year?
It's going to be really interesting to see what did the 75% who are not legal, what did they do? Mm. Did they grow as they did before? Did they leave? Did they go to Oregon? Did they call their friends and tell them nobody's enforcing anything and they should come too and we have, you know, even more expansion? I don't know what's going to happen, but that's what I'll be looking at.
And in terms of land use, what are you going to be looking at?
Well, consolidation is going to be a big thing.
Consolidation.
So, of farms. So in the original language of the bill, there was a limit of 1 acre per farm. What they've said now is that it can be 1 acre for permit, but a grower can have multiple permits. Mm. So you could have a grower who had, you know, 5 or 10 acres spread out on the landscape. And so, you know, people are worried that that may lead to consolidation. You might end up with really big players and not as many small players. That'll be interesting to see what happens.
Wow. So next time you take those pictures from Google Earth, it might be very different.
I think it will be. Yep. I think it'll be very different in a year, and I think it'll be very different in 5 years.
That's UC Berkeley professor Van Butsick. He spoke with KALW's Hana Baba. That interview is produced by Amber Miles. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney. Before we go today, we wanted to share some of what you have to say on the state's legalization of adult-use marijuana. We reached out through our new project, California Speaks, and got an overwhelming response. Here's an example.
Hi, my name is Linda, and I'm calling from San Francisco. I'm for marijuana legalization. I think locking people up has been really counterproductive, and unfortunately the federal laws still stay in effect. I'm also, I guess, concerned that the medical marijuana users don't get hit by high taxes, the so-called sin taxes, which I can see them interested in revenue, but I think those folks need their medicine and not to be taxed to death. I also think that the marijuana industry should be saved for people who've been displaced from other industries due to mechanization, sending jobs to other countries, that kind of thing. So I think those jobs should be kept for folks who have been disenfranchised, and to keep the big corporations out of the industry. They'll want to take over and make maximum profits, and I don't want to see that. So I guess my answer is I'm glad about legalization, but I want it to be more equitable in its how it's rolled out. Thanks.
Thanks for calling in to share your thoughts. You can find many more responses at the California Speaks website. It's speakca.net. And tune into KALW throughout the day tomorrow to hear more of what your neighbors have to say. Today's Cross Currents team includes Atemu Aton, Lisa Morehouse, Stephen Short, Andrew Stelzer, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are Gabe Graben, James Rollins, and Jackie Sojiko. Line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Bay Area jazz guitarist Gary Zellerbach. This fifth-generation San Franciscan joins other members of the West Side Jazz Club at the Revolution Cafe in San Francisco tomorrow evening. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Trefney.